97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Hans and Scotty live here at Tim Daly Infinity. Come by, hang out with us, 4594 South State Street. We'll kick off our NFL preview show coming up next. Eric Weddle will join us for a full hour coming up from 12 to 1 right here on the Zone Sports Network. But time to talk a little college football on the T-Mobile special guest line. One of the best in college football in terms of reporting and insight and breaking news. Brett McMurphy, kind enough to join us from the Stadium Network. Brett, how are you?
Hello, Brett.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Good morning.
We're doing well. Hans and I get asked all the time what it's like working, you know, doing the sports radio thing. And we say there's a lot of days where it's just kind of the same old, and then there's every now and then you get a day where all heck breaks loose. I'd say from your perspective, yesterday was one of those days, was it not?
It seems like the last 2 months has been like that, because there's just so many things changing on the college football landscape. But, yeah, certainly the official news that the Big Ten was going to be playing, and then, John Wilner's report about the Pac-12 looking like they can be maybe back on the field this fall. And then Larry Scott, you know, also said that he hopes that they can get back playing. And then I reported last night, sources told me the Mountain West is aggressively pushing to play this fall. So, yeah, it was not a slow news day by any means.
Brett, I really want you to help make some sense of the Big Ten and their original statement of we will not readdress the season. And then getting themselves to this point of, well, we're going to beat the Pac-12 back to coming back, and we're going to be ready for the college football playoffs. What happened in between that statement and now that made it so quick to get back and try to be back to play?
Well, I think it certainly was a mistake to say, you know, we will not revisit this and be that direct with it, because certainly – you know, one constant that we've seen during the pandemic is there's the uncertainty with everything. You know, something that looks 100% one day, a couple of days later, is totally inaccurate, totally false, it totally changes. So I don't think they were necessarily trying to beat the Pac-12 back to come back and play. I think the most important thing was they were trying to come back and play and then be a part of the playoff. And to do that, you know, they would have to start either October 17th or 24th. They don't think they can get going on the 17th, so they'll start the 24th, or actually Friday the 23rd. And then they're going to try to play 8 games in 8 weeks, and then a ninth game with the championship game to give their teams, most of it will be Ohio State, a shot at getting to the playoffs. I think the biggest thing is that the rapid testing, daily rapid testing that a lot of people have talked about, you guys have probably referenced it, I think is made the biggest impact. Obviously, money is a big part of it, but look, the Big Ten decided to postpone the season last month, so they knew the money that they were going to lose. So it wasn't all of a sudden that they thought, hey, you know what, we need to play because we're going to lose money. They knew that back in August. So I really do think the testing differences was a big deal, because now, you know, I think we're up to 12 or 13 FBS games that have been postponed or canceled, and mainly because of contact tracing. And basically what that is if you have two or three guys test positive, any individuals that they've been in contact with also have to be quarantined for a long period of time. And that's Charlotte today canceled Saturday's game at North Carolina, because they didn't have enough offensive linemen because of the contact tracing. When you can test daily, if a couple guys test positive, you test everybody and find out exactly who tests positive or not, and you don't have to quarantine, you know, a dozen players because they were in contact with somebody that was positive if they test negative.
Brett McMurphy, kind enough to join us here on the Zone Sports Network. Out here, I know Larry Scott gets roughed up a little bit, but I'll just ask you point blank, if the Big Ten doesn't make their announcement yesterday and they stay firm, do the Pac-12 stay firm as well and they don't play in the fall?
I don't think so. I mean, the biggest, again, the Pac-12, and you guys know this, I mean, I'm in Florida, you guys know this better than I do, but there's so many different challenges for the Pac-12 with state and local governments. I mean, I still don't understand why the California schools weren't allowed to practice when Governor Newsom said, well, no, they can practice. So for the longest time, the Colorado schools were not practicing because they believed that's what the government officials, what the law was, when in fact either it wasn't or there was a clarification or whatever happened. So that's not a Larry Scott issue. That's, you know, that's just the hand you're dealt. Oregon in a similar situation. So look, if these guys can practice, if they can be in groups of more than 10 people and moving forward, I think they can play too. Again, the Pac-12 was the first conference to come out with a plan to test daily. And again, that's, you know, you hear it thrown around a lot of game changer, but it really is. But they couldn't do anything with it because their governments were not allowing their college teams on campus to practice. So, you know, look, it takes a lot of shots. He's an easy pinata. But this time, I don't believe that he was at fault. And also, keep in mind, the presidents are the ones that voted not to play in the fall, in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and the Mountain West and the Mid-American. It is not the commissioners. It's easy to blame the commissioners. They do not have a vote. They do what the presidents tell them to do. And so that's where we're at with those leagues.
Right, you had mentioned with this kind of more rapid testing, the everyday testing. Are we talking about 7 days a week that the Big Ten and Pac-12 are going to be using these tests at between $20 to $23, I think it was, per test that was reported?
Yeah, I've seen different numbers and different amounts. You know, certainly like anything else, you know, the longer it goes, I would think the more inexpensive it would get. For everybody, the Big Ten announced that they would pay for the test for all the conference members. Certainly that's an advantage that the Big Ten has over, you know, say the Mountain West or the MAC, more resources, more finances. So I think that's some of the difficulties that the smaller leagues are facing. But yeah, obviously cost is a big issue. But you know, it basically boils down to, you know, do you want to, if you can spend, you know, $100 to make, you know, $150 long term, then you're gonna pay for those tests. So, I would expect that, you know, as there's more competition on the market, that those prices would come down. And that's, you know, look, we're talking specifically about college football, but that's obviously good news for everybody. You know, the more accurate information we can have out there as far as these positives and those sort of things.
You know, talking on the Mountain West Conference, I know they're still dealing with the issues that the Pac-12 is with Fresno State and San Jose State and San Diego State. How, in your conversations with sources close to that conference, how optimistic do you think that they'll be able to get back and playing in the fall?
For the Mountain West, I mean, they've got a number of schools in California, so that's going to be a challenge. But with the news from Governor Newsom, maybe that there's some clarity on that front. The one thing that's, I think, different from the Mountain West than from the other leagues is that sources told me that, you know, even if all 12 members cannot play, that the league would then still go ahead and play. So the most likely candidates that may not be able to play, I mean, Hawaii, obviously, unique situation they're in. And then also Fresno State. I don't believe they've even had kids back on campus yet. And then possibly Air Force. They've got a unique situation there where I know the NCAA announced that you don't lose a year of eligibility this year as far as any student athletes. But I believe, again, I'm not 100% on this, but I believe the military academies, that does not go into effect, so you don't gain an extra year of eligibility if you're at a military school. So that may be an issue or challenge to Air Force. So you know, again, everything's new. Everybody's kind of figuring this out as we go. But again, if it can be safe and there's somehow to get in a shortened season, because look, that's what everybody's going to do. You know, the Mountain West would like to go forward. Again, the same timetable around the Big Ten. Maybe they start October 24th. Maybe they don't start till Halloween the following week. But they would do what they can to get in seven or eight games. And then be eligible for a New Year's Six game. And obviously there's a financial incentive there, being a part of the college football playoff money distribution that all 10 conferences, you know, receive each year.
You know, Brad, at this point, we've seen so many different conferences and presidents and teams and sports waffle kind of back and forth. You know, we were just talking about the one saying we will not revisit, and then they did revisit. Is there any chance that if all five power conferences do play and the Mountain West Conference gets back in here in October and they start to move forward, because of the nightmare and the logistics of giving that extra year of eligibility, is there any chance that they recant and come back and say, yeah, we're taking that eligibility thing away?
Hey, you know what? You summed it up best. We've seen everything change and flip-flop or whatever, so you cannot definitively say anything these days. But no, the fact that they've come out and said that, you know, even if everybody comes in and gets in these seasons, I don't think they would come back and do that. Because look, nobody's going to play a full 12-game season. That's already known. So we're looking at some conferences maybe only playing 8 games, maybe as few as 7 games, and that's before some postponements or cancellations. So, you know, look, I know how the NCAA's how they're viewed as the bad guy, the villain wearing a black hat, but yeah, that would even be of epic proportions if the NCAA decided to go back on their, hey, you know what, you don't get that year of eligibility, we're going to change that. So no, again, everything has changed this year, but I think that's one thing I think we can safely say they would not reverse course on.
Do you believe the NCAA will be a little bit more lenient on guys that opted out when they felt like their teams weren't going to play and now want to opt back in? Do you think they'll be a little bit more lenient on making those guys eligible instead of making them, you know, jump through a bunch of hoops to try to get back out on the field?
Well, that's certainly a big question, because again, you know, that now you get into eligibility issues. It's not necessarily opting out. You can say you're opting out. It's just, did you sign with an agent? Did you accept any money? Those sort of things. So I think they would work with those individuals to allow them to play, because, again, you know, and I know there's been some, you know, surprise, there's lawyers on Twitter tweeting. But basically saying, you know, look, the Big Ten commissioner in the official statement, like you guys mentioned, said, we will not revisit it. So they basically said there will not be a season. So that's why these guys opted out. That's why they signed with an agent. That's why they accepted a signing bonus, et cetera, et cetera. So you would think, again, a common sense rule here, that because they were going based on the information they were given by their conference, that's why they did it, that they would allow them to opt back in, if you will. But certainly they would have to have some issues as far as money accepted or agents signed with, and they would have to clear that up. Again, I would think the NCAA would work with these individuals because this is a unique year, and I don't think you cannot say, well, we've never done this before, because that excuse or that reasoning does not fly. So hopefully they'll work with them. I think they will, but there's nothing official yet on the NCAA front as far as how they're going to deal with those guys.
As this thing continues to come together, Brett, and you're just looking now at the top 25, some of the top performers, and you know who stepped away from some of these programs, who do you think will be the top five, top six teams in the country as this thing really shapes up?
Oh, wow, I'm trying to think. So I vote in the AP poll. So our first rankings, we were to include all 130 teams. And then the second ranking, we were not to include the Big Ten or Pac-12. So obviously a lot of change. I had Clemson number one. I think they're you know, they have the best chance to get the college football playoff of any team, the easiest road. I think Ohio State is one of the top four teams in the country. I would put Alabama again up there in the top four. And I think Oklahoma and maybe Texas is a dark horse, or Florida is a dark horse for that fourth spot. You know, certainly if the Pac-12 can get going in time, to get in the playoff. I really, really like Oregon. And but again, they had a lot of guys opt out. You know, are those guys going to come back? That's some unknowns right now. But it's the usual suspects: Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and then after that, I would take a mix of Oregon, Florida, Texas, or Oklahoma along those lines.
Brett McMurphy, kind enough to join us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. It was funny yesterday hearing Ed Orgeron say, well, you know, most of our players have already caught COVID-19. I was wondering if there was ever going to be any fallout or if people were going to have any issues, but with him saying that. But it seems like there's probably a lot of teams across the country that the virus has probably gone through their locker room pretty on a pretty significant basis. Were you surprised that he admitted that and kind of in a nonchalant way?
Yeah, I think he was. I think he was too honest. And I've talked to people, you know, coaches and ADs, and there are some, I don't want to name names, but they do believe that there are some schools that were kind of using the herd immunity strategy. And this was, you know, several weeks ago, where once you got the virus, you know, you would not be tested again for another, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks or whatever. So it was almost like, let's get it now and get it out of the way so we can go ahead and play. Again, that's, you know, everyone's got a conspiracy theory involving college football, no matter what you're talking about. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you would have to ask the individual players. I certainly would be shocked if a college football staff encouraged their players to get the virus, to get it out of the way. But again, knowing college kids, I would not put it past, you know, some athletes saying, hey, you know, look, just reading the tea leaves and saying, hey, look at this. If we get it now, then we're good for the rest of the year. Let's get it out of the way. And we'll take the chances on any long-term impacts because we're bulletproof, we're young, we're healthy, you're in that mindset. So I don't think college coaches do a lot of shady things sometimes. Again, they're not all like that. Some of them are. Most of them, I think, aren't. But I would be surprised if any coach, you know, encouraged his players to catch the virus, to kind of get it out of the way so they could move on the rest of the year.
Hey, Brett, we saw this We Are United front right as COVID was hitting and things were really starting to heat up. Are we just going to see the We Are Not United really anymore front? Like, what does, do they speak up anymore, or did college football players learn their lesson? What happens here?
You know, I don't know. That's a great question. And, you know, I think, you know, the Big Ten players did that, the Pac-12 players. I think some other leagues did it also. You know, there were some of the things that they're seeking are very reasonable and attainable. But then, you know, for instance, the Pac-12, when the first thing out of the gate, they're like, we want 50% of the revenues. Well, they're just like anyone involved with the Pac-12, when they read that and they read that line, right, they just stop even considering it. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is not the NFL. This is not Major League Baseball. You know, you're not going to get 50, half of the revenue. So that's a non-starter right there. So, you know, hopefully, you know, the organizations that are doing this will get good guidance, and, you know, hopefully some good things will come out of this that will benefit the student athletes, because there certainly are a lot of areas that they should have, be in better situations with. But, you know, demanding half of the revenue, look, that's never going to happen. And if you say, if we don't get that, we're not going to play, well, then, you know, hopefully you got a good remote, because you'll be sitting at home watching everybody else play.
Brett, always great information, man. We really appreciate your time. I know you're really busy, so thanks for making it happen for us, and I look forward to catching up to you here very soon.
Thanks, Brett.
You got it. Thank you.
Brett McMurphy joining us on the T-Mobile special guest line. I think that we're closer I in terms of Pac-12 and Mountain West. I think we still have a ways to go before we get over that finish line, but things certainly heading in the right direction. The whole thing yesterday, and this a lot of this happened with us, but the whole Gavin Newsom, wait, there's nothing that says you guys can't play football. I don't know what you're talking about. And then John Wilner did a great job of going to a county official and saying, hey, look, this is what they're saying. This is what the governor of California is saying. And they're like, well, you can have a game, but you can't have more than 12 people on the field at one time during a practice. So you can go 5-on-5 or you can do some mental exercises. Some of the things they said was just, it was just so laughable. I was dying reading some of the things. Obviously, somebody has no idea how the game of football is played whatsoever. Oh, and then they walked that back and said, no, look, if they present us with a plan, talk about what they're going to do, we'll find a way to get them back out on the field. And so California and Oregon said the same thing. Their governor's office said, look, you know what, if you bring us a plan, you haven't done that yet, but if you bring us a plan, talk about your testing, what you've got in play, we'll find a way to get you back out on the field. So it seems like all these hurdles that everybody was talking about could come down really fast if the Pac-12 were to be really proactive and try to get it done.
And in regards to that, this rapid testing is a big move, as Brett McMurphy mentioned. Could you imagine being a member of the Big Ten, seeing the bill that they're paying? Because Brett McMurphy just told us on air, which I had not read or seen anywhere else, that the Big Ten is going to foot the entire bill for all of their conference members and this rapid result testing. If they do that daily, if they do that daily with the 14 teams that are in there, I mean, Scotty and I could do some math on it, but it's going to be millions.
Yeah.
Through the season.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars. And that's if you take it on the low end of the testing number suggestion.
We read that it was $20 a test. I'm sure if you buy that many tests, they'll bring that price down considerably on the per test price. But even if it's $8 to $10, you're still looking at an exorbitant amount of money on testing.
Oh, man. An insane amount. And the Big Ten said they're going to foot that bill for the testing devices too, I would assume.
Hey, by the way, yesterday the Mid-Atlantic Conference, the MAC, said right after the Big Ten said we're not going to go, after the Big Ten said they were going to go, the MAC sent out a release and said, look, the safety of our players is still our number one priority. We're not going to go. We're planning on a spring sport. Well, a tweet, and now I just lost the tweet, but a tweet coming out that said that, well, the MAC is now realizing they need to play, and they're meeting, their presidents and their athletic directors are meeting later today. And a quote from one of their officials, we really have no choice. Meaning it's the domino effect going the other way. It's like, okay, well, the Mountain West is going to go. The Pac-12 is going to go. Conference USA is already going. Sun Belt's already going. They've made a name for themselves with their wins over Big 12 teams. So we can't be the only conference in FBS not playing football. We have to do it.
I have, like you said, I've got more respect for people that haven't waffled through this.
Yeah.
Like you and I, we have been set on doing everything possible all along.
Yes.
Do everything possible to get on the field. And we have celebrated the teams and conferences that have gotten on the field, that have taken all the precautions and put the money in and gone through the testing. And, you know, we've looked at the conferences that shut things down and said, did they do enough? Did they try hard enough for their kids, for their employees, for the thousands of people that rely on that for occupation, for income, so they can pay the rent, they can pay the mortgage, so that they can put clothes on their kids' backs? Did they do enough? You and I have not changed our stance from day one. I have very little respect for people that have waffled in this. Very little. If you said, boy, this virus, if somebody gets it, boy, that's a shame, and you better keep them away from college campuses and better not play the game, you better stick to it. That's why, you know, yesterday when you told me that the MAC was sticking to it, I was like, okay, I get that.
I respected that, yeah.
All right. But now all of a sudden the MAC's like, well, we got the rapid testing. That doesn't stop a kid from getting it.
Yeah.
That helps a team identify contact tracing. It doesn't stop a kid from getting it. And it doesn't stop a kid from getting it and spreading it in the locker room in a two-day period. They're still exposing each other because they're going home to, you know, whatever roommates that they've got on campus or whatever girl that they might be dating or whatever parents or relatives that they're living with, they're still exposing themselves and coming back to the locker room with it. And by the way, somebody was making fun of me because I said gestation. He is right. It's incubation.
I did hear that. And, you know, sometimes it's like, just going to let that one go.
I don't know why that word slipped out.
You know, it's like, you know, that virus sits in you for 9 months and then all of a sudden it comes out and eats all the food in your house and takes all your money.
It costs you $480,000 to raise.
That virus is playing volleyball and just taking all your money.
I just next thing you know, you're paying $5,000 for a club season for that virus. I just have very little respect for people that can't make up their mind.
Yeah.
So make up your mind. Have a stance. If you felt like it was too dangerous because the virus is dangerous, well, the kids can still get the virus and change and exchange it in the locker room. So don't use this new rapid testing as a, well, this is going to eliminate the virus. No, it does not eliminate the virus.
Yeah.
It helps reduce the risk of me losing my entire offensive line.
Yes.
But it doesn't stop my offensive line from getting the virus.
Exactly. That's your point. All it does is really protect you in terms of not having a huge outbreak on your team.
So I just think it's kind of a clown result to switch stances.
Hands and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Coming up next, Good, the Bad, the Ugly. And remember, Eric Weddle will join us coming up at high noon. We'll have some NFL chat with him coming up from 12 to 1 on our NFL preview show right here on the Zone Sports Network.
Let's go!
The Big Show.
It's a big deal!
With Gordon Monson and Jake Scott.
Didn't he just say there's nothing the state is doing to stand in the way of college football? What? Your policy is in the way!
I'm not following that, really. Pro teams are doing it. Sorry, my phone's ringing.
What, is this your first day on radio?
I'll just let it ring out.
Hit the button.
Oh. I know, it's across the room. Jake, why are you calling me? Are you just doing that just to bug me now?
I am. I admit it. That was a low blow. Who's calling you this time?
I don't know who that is.
You don't have Lloyd's number in your phone?
Now Scotty's calling.
Phone's ringing, dude.
The Big Show. Weekdays from 2 to 7 on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Oh, boy. Good, the bad, the ugly right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Brought to you, of course, by our good friends over at Zero Res. Get 3 rooms of carpet clean for $33 per room. 4th room is yours for free. Right here on the Zone Sports Network. Not to try to get ahead of ourselves and get to the bad, the ugly, but boy, you've got every like elected official that is tweeting out that our COVID numbers are going to be really bad today. And there's a press conference coming up today at noon. But Speaker of the House saying today's positive case numbers are very alarming. And then there's multiple people talking. So apparently it's, I don't know if we hit 4 digits today, but apparently it's not going to be good. Wear that mask. People get really upset when you tell them to wear a mask, but wear a mask. I think it works. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry. I didn't mean to get you off the path here, but let's get to the good.
For just the second time in the last 6 years, Scotty?
Yep.
There was a hole in one at the US Open.
It's
only
that.
The second time in 6 years. I know BT talked a little bit about it earlier. This is only, in the history of the U.S. Open, this is only the 46th hole in one. I'm trying to remember how far back the U.S. Open goes, but isn't it like 116 years or something?
It's been around a bit.
Came from Patrick Reed. It was a par 3 on the 7th hole. And I think, Lloyd, you could correct me if I'm wrong, I think that par 3 on the 7th hole is about 165 or 170 yards.
And I can't think of somebody I'd rather not get a hole in one.
You don't like Patrick Reed?
No.
Neither Scotty or I have him, so why are you so against Patrick Reed hitting a hole in
one? No, I'm just not a big – he's kind of a hothead. Not a big fan, Patrick Reed fan.
This is unlike a hole in one that you typically see, Scotty. He smacked this thing. It hit probably it hit the green maybe 10 feet in front of the pin, bounced once, hit the pin, and fell straight into the hole.
Wow.
So that's, you know, typically you see, you know, past the hole, suck back down the hill.
Yeah, backspin brings it back.
Yeah, and falls in. Or sometimes you do see some roll forward and it dribbles in, but very rarely you never see the one hopping in.
So you're essentially saying this shouldn't really even count. It's kind of a lucky shot.
Well, and I think right now what I did is I did report this to the UGA officials and said, I think you need to take a second look at this because I don't know if this should count. No, I think you count that one, even though it is a little bit bizarre. Could you imagine being at a U.S. Open and knocking in a hole in one?
No. Oh, I can't even imagine hitting a hole-in-one.
Yeah, I haven't been able to do that either.
You know, I was golfing with a guy once it was in Burley on one of those par threes where you got that Snake River, and he puts it in the water on his first shot. And so he tees up again and sinks it. So he essentially hits the hole-in-one to save par. Would you tell people you had a hole-in-one if you did that?
No.
You haven't had a hole-in-one, Hans? I thought you did.
Huh.
Lloyd, how many do you have?
I don't have any.
Oh, I thought you were
apparently like... Jake has like two.
Okay.
Was that on his round of 76?
Yeah, I think so.
Both of them.
Mm-hmm. Lloyd, that one's on you, Lloyd.
Oh, man, we're trying to develop better relationships.
Oh, we're just having fun. Come on.
Lloyd, the guys don't like you.
Lloyd's over there. We're just trying to have fun. All right.
Fun.
There's your good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
Really ugly scene at Yankee Stadium on Wednesday. A base drilled in the face by a 99 mile per hour Gerrit Cole fastball. Things didn't look good there for a bit, too. The unbelievable moment all went down in the seventh inning of New York's blowout win over the Blue Jays when Cole was looking to strike out the hitter. It was a 3-2 count. Cole threw that trademark heater up in the zone to get the strikeout, but it appeared his catcher was expecting the breaking ball, ended up cracking home plate ump John Tupain right on the chin. Because remember, they've got that face guard there, but it came in a little low, got him on the chin. The video of the throw, you can hear him kind of yell out as soon as that thing hit his face, and then he crumpled to the ground. The 37-year-old ump sat on the dirt for a few minutes, then got up, tried to shake it off, and move on. But, wow, I can't imagine how bad that would be to be on the receiving end of something like that.
Yeah, if you watch this throw, he calls the out. But the batter's claiming that he got some wood on that thing. I don't think he did. But it almost looks like it could have. And you have you ever seen, like, when they actually tip the ball a little bit, it starts to spin, it almost speeds it up.
Yeah.
Puts it off the trajectory just a bit. If you look at the window that ball got through from the batter's bat to the catcher's glove to the chin of this ump, I don't know, man. The probability is astronomical. You don't see it a ton. And they do have that neck guard that kind of hangs down from the mask.
Yeah.
That neck guard saved his life. If he didn't have that, it probably hits him in the chin and in the throat. And I don't know what happens. Probably surgery, collapsed esophagus, and just a terrible outcome. Baseball freaks me out, man. It has always freaked me out. I've got a lot of respect for a man that can stand in a box and take a 100-mile-per-hour fastball and try to swing a bat at it. I remember when I finally got away from T-ball and I tried my first fast pitch, just standing in the box with, you know, those 20-mile-per-hour floaters that come in Little League. There was something about it. I could take on a 300-pound pulling guard, but it's the – it's that ball being thrown at your face is the freakiest thing.
Lloyd, back in the day at Murray, how fast were they coming in on you? Did you have anybody there that was breaking 90?
We went up. I had some guys from West that got some guys that played pro that were had a guy named Gosling that I think was up at East.
Ryan?
No, not Ryan Gosling. He pitched for the Diamondbacks, but he was in the 90s.
What's that like standing in on something like that?
The glove pops, and you definitely notice it. But it's, you know, the thing is, like Hans was talking about, when you go from T-ball to hearing the glove pop, I remember that almost that fear that you first feel when you're hearing that glove pop and you're stepping into that box. And then when it goes up a notch to, like, you know, when you're going against somebody that's thrown in the 90s, you get a little nervous.
I would imagine. All right, there's your bad. Let's get to the ugly.
And, of course, the ugly.
Some news being announced out of Missouri. Missouri count of players who will be missing this game in the season opener against Alabama on September 26th, Scotty, is up to 12.
Oh, wow.
Missouri will be missing 12 so far. Though not all 12 have necessarily tested positive for the coronavirus, the SEC mandates a 14-day quarantine for those who have been in prolonged close contact with somebody who did test positive. So Missouri's got 12 that'll be out, and they are attempting to continue.
Well, I mean, it's pretty impressive that if you can make it work. Now, what is it, Charlotte? Is supposed to play North Carolina coming up this weekend.
Correct.
They just don't have any offensive linemen. Not that they've all tested positive. It's just the contact tracing. These guys have been in meeting rooms. You have one or two who test positive, and they've all been in a meeting room together. You can't make it work anymore. And so they're all on quarantine. They don't have any offensive linemen. They've got to postpone the game. But if you've got a group here where it's spread out among different position groups and you can still fill the team, then by all means, go ahead and get it done. It's like, imagine 12 guys sprained an ankle in the middle of the week or, you know, whatever injury. You're like, well, we still have to play the game. Let's go.
We still have, you know, 68 other kids that are prepared to play the game. We've prepared it too deep. I love the want-to attitude here. And Coach Drinkwitz made this comment. He said, we've got to make do. We're going to tee it up on the 26th. And everybody in Missouri is going to expect that we're prepared, so we're going to be ready. Yeah, they're going to continue against Alabama.
Yeah. All right, Hans and Scotty, this is 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Eric Weddle's going to join us coming up in the 12 o'clock hour. Also coming up next, Whole World News. We are live here at Tim Daly Infinity. Remember, they've got the warranty that lasts forever on these vehicles. You buy one of these Infinities and you want to make sure it's on the road for a long, long time. Well, that warranty is going to make sure that you can own this vehicle for 5, 6, 10, 15 years. You can put hundreds of thousands of miles on it, and it's still covered. It's only here at Tim Daly Infinity, part of the Tim Daly family, which has just done remarkable work. And these Infinities, price to move, you can get 0% financing on a good chunk of these new vehicles. The leases are extremely low priced, and you can really, really get a beautiful vehicle at a remarkable price here. Tim Daly Infinity, 4594 South State Street, right here on the Zone Sports Network.
This is DJ and PK.
Joined in studio now by Riley Jensen, football insider, former Aggie quarterback.
I know how it works here, PK. You just go with whatever I say. You're kind of like the adversary. You don't really push against people. You just give them a nudge really, really far in the direction they're already going. So if I say you hate Utah State, you're like, oh, yeah, I can't stand those guys. You're just like the adversary. Beelzebub in studio.
DJ and Lucifer doesn't have the same ring. Sounds like a dangerous show, though.
DJ and Lucifer?
Yeah, doesn't have the same ring as DJ and PK.
It actually doesn't right. change the show at all. It feels exactly the same.
I'm a devil. What can I tell you?
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10. Presented by WCF Insurance. Reminding you to be careful out there. On 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole wide world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands.
Hands and Scotty, it's time for another edition of Whole World News right here on the Zone Sports Network.
I think this is beautiful. I think that it's encouraging for our aging group of people in this country and across the world. I think that this story is tear-jerking. I think it gives hope to those that don't have hope.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know what you got here, but this is impressive.
Well, I feel this strongly about it. It's a study that was jointly funded between European unions and the Japanese government. And it suggested that robots that are programmed to get to know the elderly and talk to the elderly can actually encourage them to kind of stay engaged and informed and having fun. And it can keep the elderly alive for an extended period of time just because they're finding joy in their life with these robots. Look, I'm not even kidding, man. I'm so encouraged by this that I'm feeling almost renewed.
That's really impressive.
So, what?
I think it's impressive.
So the authors of the... The authors of the Caresses robots.
The Caresses.
Yeah. So it's a culturally competent robot. Okay, so Scotty, I've got two bits of conversation coming between the robots and the elderly here from their study. One, I believe, is a British man. I think one is an Indonesian woman, if I remember right.
Okay.
But we're going to start with this. Now, this is a question coming from the robot, just trying to get to know their elderly person that they're interacting with. Here's number one.
Tell me what kind of situations make you feel happy.
Lovely. Lovely to be with Pepe. I'm very cheerful lady. I love children. I'm happy to be surrounded by the children. I like lovely music. I don't like to be alone. Before, because I born in here, very big family.
Okay, so this is what's incredible about
this. Was that just the robot the whole time?
No, that was the Indonesian woman and the robot. The robot asked the question, and the Indonesian told the robot what she likes in life. Now, what's crazy about this? Guys, it gives me chills. The robots learn about you as you tell them. So they come in and they ask you questions, like what makes you happy, like she asked the woman there. And then the robot learns, and then the robot starts to ask you questions in regards to what they're learning about your life and kind of starts to pry a little bit. So this robot had asked this British man about being young during World War II and then follows it up with this question.
I know that many children were evacuated from British cities to the countryside during the Second World War. I was wondering, do you remember that time?
Yes.
Please, tell me what was the most difficult thing that you and your family had to go through during the Second World War?
Well, the most difficult thing was that we were a family of four, a husband and wife, and a little boy, me, and my younger sister. And my father, who was 29, was conscripted to go into the Royal Air Force. And then they posted him to Iraq in the Middle East. And we didn't see him for 3.5 years at least.
So, Scotty, it learns about you. Then it asks you questions.
Yeah, this is kind of, it's kind of sad. Like, it's like.
It is not
but
the, sad.
But this person is talking to, like, a piece of metal. Like. Like
yeah,
there's no
hold
emotional
on, no,
connection
hold,
there.
No, I don't like what you just said there.
What?
Okay, go watch this robot. It's got plastic coverings, and it's actually kind of a nice-looking robot.
All right, so let's say a robot comes up to an elderly lady and says, I know I'm just a big hunk of metal, but you know what? What kind of treat would I like? What is something that I could have that you think that I would enjoy right now? And the response could be something along the lines of...
Have a piece of chocolate cake.
I'm just saying... I think we're toying with the emotions of the elderly here. And who's to say these things aren't hackable? Like somebody's like, yes, Edna, what is your social security number? Can you go down to the Rite Aid and get some prepaid Visa gift cards? And can you give me those numbers? I have two robot children that I need to get into the United States. Can you help me with that?
Have a seat.
Like, I think there's a lot of potential for danger here.
This is just sad. By the way, I feel like it makes me feel like these elderly people have no family that'll come talk to them.
So they have to put these don't.
These just robots.
A lot don't. That's why we need these robots to interact. You guys aren't seeing the picture here, Scotty. You've got this.
I saw the video of that guy that was talking about his dad, and it was like he looked.
He was. Yeah, I don't engaged. Even. I can't even he was say. Glad someone
nah,
was asking.
He did not look engaged.
Well, you know what, you guys, I'm really sad for you that this is how you feel about this, because. Like, for instance, so then this British gentleman is talking with this robot, and the robot's like, excuse me, what music would you like to hear? And, you know, he was like, Billie Eilish or whatever, something. And then the robot played some of the music, and was like, so why do you like that music? And he's like, oh, well, it's cool.
I am so silly. You don't know what I'm talking about, do you?
So
I think there's a lot of potential for problems here.
There's no potential, man. These are not crackable robots. They're just programmed robots that listen to conversation and then build questions. And like I talked about, they're culturally competent robots. So they understand the cultures. That they can be in America or Japan and they can speak the different languages. And they've got a little computer screen on front of them, and they're like, what show would you like to watch? And you can say, you know what, I'd like to watch an episode of Seinfeld. And they'll pull it up and you watch it right on their chest.
I think that's even a little bit more creepy, honestly. I think
it's helpful, man. And by the way,
get them a dog, for crying out loud. They want companionship. Get them a live thing that can actually show real emotion.
The elderly forget to feed pets.
Well, then that's what the robot's for. Have the robot give them some Alpo, and then they can have a real genuine connection with the dog. All right, Hans and Scotty. Eric Weddle is going to join us next as we kick off your NFL preview show straight ahead here on the Zone Sports Network.